today on Doomed. All right, this is just the wrong intro song for this particular show. This is a breaking last minute episode of Doomed because of just something that just recently happened in the news. I'm going to need to turn down this song and play a song that just fits the moment much better. So let me just pull that up and let's get this started. That's right. I picked the most emo song I could think of. Sacco Amaretto Lime by Brand New. And on this episode of Doomed, ladies and gentlemen, we will be saying farewell, bye-bye to the black helicopters, goodbye to the gay frogs, the freaking gay frogs, I should say, because Alex Jones has been banned from Apple iTunes, from Facebook, from Spotify, and the saddest one of all to me, InfoWars is gone from YouTube. Alright, I'm gonna introduce my guest now, Jared Holt of Right Wing Watch. Let me pull up the old feeds here. Let's see. Alright, here we are. Song went bye-bye, countdown went bye-bye. Hey Jared, how you doing?
How's it going?
How you doing today?
Yeah, it's good to be back on the pod.
All right. I hope you liked my intro. I've gave I'm feeling a little bit sad. A little bit hurt.
Yeah, it sounds like it's hitting you kind of hard. You doing all right, buddy?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to miss the sweet, sweet content that Alex Jones gave me. I mean, he's provided me with so much. I mean, I cannot tell you how many videos I got out of Alex Jones when I was working at Cafe. I mean, I was doing a video on that guy probably at least once a week. Maybe once every 2 weeks if I want to be kind.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same with Right Wing Watch. It's like if it was the afternoon, the news cycle was kind of slow, I always knew I could turn on InfoWars and just find something batshit to like post on the website.
Right.
Yeah, and that's going to be a lot harder to find now.
Yeah, it's going to be, you know, I picked that Brand New song. I know Brand New's got their issues with their singer and everything. I know, but come on. I grew up with Brand New. I was in high school when they were a band, you know, when they were big or whatever. So that song, the chorus is Stay 18 Forever. And, you know, InfoWars is just out of that, actually. InfoWars is officially 19 years old. But I feel like, you know, it was a good song to play because I think that we're going to want to forget about this year. So they're going to want to stay 18 forever. They're going to want to be the 18-year-old InfoWars when straight out of 2016, Alex Jones was just living the life of, he just got a guy who was regular guest on his show in the White House, Donald Trump. He was living high in the hog, man. I'm sure he's going to want to live in that 2016-2017 time period forever.
Who doesn't, man?
Was that a little bit too much analysis as to why I chose that Brand New song for you? Was I looking a little bit too deep? Was I getting a little too emo there?
You got in your feelings a little bit, man.
Listeners, you might hear that I still have this. I have a cough drop in my mouth, as you've been hearing probably now for the 200th week. This podcast hasn't even been going on for 20. This is the 27th episode of the podcast. So for the 27th week, I have this cough I can't get rid of, but I'm sure it won't be annoying. Jared, thank you for joining us. Let's talk about InfoWars and Alex Jones on the day the InfoWars world stood still. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you got into it a little bit in your intro, but, you know, the reason we're talking about InfoWars today, if you haven't seen already, is because Apple, then followed by Facebook and YouTube, and Spotify has removed Alex Jones and InfoWars content from the platforms. And they're not taking it well, man. You know, this came after sort of this, public outrage campaign started over the content of Alex Jones's show, often which would very clearly violate the community guidelines set in motion, you know, or that users agree to when they get on these platforms. And, you know, people were asking, you know, why do you keep making excuses for InfoWars? Like, I got banned for XYZ, but then Alex Jones can, you know, pantomime shooting Robert Mueller and say that, like, I'm going to get you, bitch, or whatever he said. And, like, nothing happens to him. So, you know, here we are. InfoWars is a lot harder to watch now. You know, in a different way. You know, it was hard to watch for its own reasons, but now it is, it's actually difficult to get to it.
You know, I've said on this show before, and I hate go. I still sound like I'm sad about this, but let me explain my feelings about it first, right up top. When it comes to Alex Jones being banned from iTunes, YouTube, Facebook, Pinterest, even as
I didn't even know that one was a
yeah,
thing.
My new coworkers at Mashable discovered that one. I was very, very proud to be there when they saw that one. Yes, he was on Pinterest. And
I love to pin my 9/11 memes right next to my cooking ideas.
Right. But, you know, the funny thing was, as he was getting banned from these networks, he actually was removing the social network icons from his website. So on InfoWars, for a short time, the only ones there were his Twitter account and his Pinterest account. But, you know, you bring up the 9/11 thing, and the funny thing about 9/11, the thing about that is, you know, when Alex Jones early on was this 9/11 truther, I mean, I'm not going to say he was harmless, but, you know, 9/11 trutherism is a little bit different than, like, Sandy Hook trutherism. Whereas, you know, on 9/11 trutherism is you're basically saying the government really made it happen. The government was involved. You're still going after. You're still punching up in a way, even though you're still crazy.
You're going after something that's like very vague.
Yes.
It's not like Sandy Hook where it's like there are defined, like, these are the victims.
Right. Like the Sandy Hook trutherism, like, I guess the equivalent of, like, if Sandy Hook trutherism was 9/11 trutherism, would just be going after the shooter, I guess, because he's dead and he can't be, you know, he can't be harmed anymore or whatever. But no, this is literally going. Sandy Hook trutherism literally is attacking the very real families, ruining their lives. There's stories coming out now where families can't even go visit their children's grave because they had to move out of town because these Sandy Hook truthers, who were certainly emboldened in many ways by Alex Jones's early on Sandy Hook trutherism, they can't visit their children's graves. They had to move out of the state. Or the town or whatever, their lives have been ruined by this. So yeah, a little bit different. You know, when Alex Jones was a 9/11 truther, it's almost like I could say those were the good old days. I mean, really, it was just harmless. I hate using that word, but in retrospect, comparing it to Sandy Hook trutherism, harmless conspiratorial belief comparatively.
Sorry, there's a little bit of a lag on my end. Comparatively, you know, I think what has changed is Alex Jones and InfoWars have taken to targeting very specific individuals and smearing them with all sorts of, you know, defamatory claims. And for that reason, InfoWars is in the middle of a handful of lawsuits for various things that they've said. And, you know, targeting, harassing, and bullying people on the individual level is supposedly not allowed on these platforms.
news to me.
That is not enforced.
News to me, yeah.
It happened. That is like the entirety of YouTube culture. is just like dunking on each other. But that's an aside. I mean, I don't know. You know, we were talking a little bit before the show about just having like really mixed feelings on this.
Right.
And I've certainly got them, and you've got them. It's.
Well, I know earlier today I was being told by people who are watching Sam Cedar on the Majority Report that he was conflicted too, because, you know, he's a YouTube guy. He's got he gets what, like 3,000 people watching the live stream on you at any given time on his YouTube channel. He's got many more than that when it comes to people who download the podcast. And he doesn't like the idea that these companies, and I agree to an extent, he doesn't like the idea that these companies are sort of the gatekeepers. And,
right.
And they're, yeah, go ahead.
Oh, it's just there's no, you know, standard of enforcement. These policies are very vague. Their enforcement is very opaque. And, you know, the ways those decisions are made are, you know, often not shared with the public. So essentially what you've got is like your content is subject to just like whatever moderator employee happens to like have that hit their inbox at the given moment. And, you know, for a lot of people who make their livelihood on platforms like this, you know, a bad moderation move can, you know, jeopardize your ability to make money. And I, you know, I wish there was a more consistent way to do this sort of thing. Like we were talking before, it's like a lot of the stuff that these companies cited when they banned Alex Jones, they could have banned him like right when he did it. But instead, they like bent over backwards to make excuses and like carve out exceptions in the rule to enforce this stuff. And now it's just sort of all of a sudden. It feels more reactionary and less like an indication that these companies have any plans to like more consistently enforce the policies they claim they're going to enforce.
Right.
And more of, you know, just trying to make a story go away in the press.
Right. I mean, there's been times where Alex Jones deserved to be banned from these places. Right now just seems so random. I mean, first of all, they're citing videos that are from months ago. I mean, Alex Jones is in some sort of small, cloistered in some weird corner of YouTube account. He's got a huge audience. He's got a huge audience of people who are fans and a huge audience of people such as yourself and the rest of Right Wing Watch and Media Matters and probably even more organizations like that, probably just solo critics who just like shitting on Alex Jones to begin with, who watch the show, who have caught these moments as they happened, without a doubt have complained about these moments when they happened, and just nothing. I mean, it's clear to me that, first of all, the chronological order of this is clear as day. You have, for, geez, it feels like at least no less than 2 months now, you've had people complaining to Facebook, to Spotify, to Twitter, to YouTube, to who knows what other channels, that to other platforms, I should say, that Alex Jones has had violent hate speech rhetoric in his latest daily show. And Facebook and YouTube have constantly set out these press responses, these statements saying this is strike number two, or this is, you know, we were bundling these strikes on these four videos, so it's only one strike.
Yeah, which I've never heard of
happening. Yeah. So, you know, we're sending a warning to him. He's getting a message that he can't do this stuff. Facebook saying how, you know, we don't want to police this sort of content on these pages. You know, fake news is not against our terms of service. Alex Jones can say whatever he wants as long as he's not advocating for real-life violence against someone. oh, that what he just said about what he wants to do to Muslims, he didn't really advocate for that to happen. He's just saying something in his conspiratorial way or whatever. You know, they've been beating around the bush, which I'm sure, mm-hmm. you know, Alex Jones probably would like. Sounds like I'm making some sort of George Bush truther reference there or something. but then all of a sudden, last night, Apple, out of the blue, decides they don't want Alex Jones and InfoWars podcasts on their network, on their iTunes platform anymore. Bans them outright. And then the dominoes just fall. It's one by one. Facebook, YouTube, Spotify, Pinterest. I mean, the list goes on, but not Twitter. And, you know, a lot of people...
Twitter's not going
to
do it.
Right. Jack has come out and said they're not going to do it, or whoever Twitter sent out to say this. And again, this is something else we were talking about right before we were broadcasting live here. You know, I shit on Twitter a lot. Jack, get the Nazis and the white supremacists off your platform, buddy. It's not that hard.
It's so easy. We're all pointing to them.
You're right, right. However, I gotta say, the way Alex Jones uses Twitter, actually, I don't think is against their terms of service. Alex Jones uses his Twitter for the 99.9% of the time. You go to Alex Jones's Twitter, and all the tweets are just going to be links to outside videos or outside source or outside, you know, to Infowars.com for his show or his stories or whatever. He doesn't.
He aggregates with it.
Right. He doesn't use it as like a platform to share his actual views. He tells people where to go using Twitter so he could share his views. And I can see how that doesn't go against Twitter's terms. I mean, if you want to talk about someone related to part of the InfoWars family tree who probably does deserve a ban and probably does break their terms of service regularly, it's probably Prison Paul.
I mean, Paul Joseph Watson, baby.
Right. I mean, he uses it in a way where he's actually espousing his hate on that site directly. He goes after people directly, although I will say when he goes after me, I love it. So, Prison Paul, if you come across this, send the love my way. But anyway, for people who don't like it, you know, it's harassment sometimes, depending on how he goes about it. A lot of the times I'll say it probably does fall under harassment. You know, but the question I have is, you know, without, and I think Max Reed of, formerly of Gawker, of New York Magazine now, does a really good job of really parsing the difference. You know, you cannot mourn this sort of, you cannot mourn what happened to Alex Jones, but still question, is this really the world we want to live in, where these few tech companies are the arbiters of what? And again, they are private enterprises. This is not a free speech issue. This isn't a First Amendment issue to any conservative who comes across this podcast or YouTube stream. They're all in their right to do this. There's nothing Alex Jones can do legally. But these companies basically own all the major channels. It's like, you know, it's like we're almost living back in like when antenna, you know, cable news, antenna rate, you know, antenna, network television, excuse me, old school style radio. You know, we say the internet gives everybody a voice, which is true, but then we still have these companies who have risen to the top and pretty much are accounting for like 95%, to be kind, I guess, of the platforms that actually host this sort of content.
Yeah, it's I mean, I don't feel bad about Alex Jones getting kicked off these platforms. It makes my job harder. So I guess for a selfish reason, I'm like, oh man, now I have to spend extra time locating this stuff. But I don't feel bad because he's just, you know, vehemently broken the rules and just caused so much harm and, you know, damage to the victims of his conspiracy theories. But at the same time, like, you know, this, like you said, this isn't a free speech issue. This is a question of like how, you know, who polices the internet? And is it, right. You know, this, when it's left in the interest of these companies, it's going to be enforced based on the bottom dollar. Right. So, you know, I mean, I feel like it's not hard to surmise that, you know, InfoWars being a huge Facebook page, you know, if they, you know, cancel Facebook and 1 million, 2 million people protest and leave Facebook, that takes a dent on their bottom line. So I can imagine like why they would make excuses to keep a huge page like that online. But the fact is, like, these decisions are just made whenever, and these companies have written into almost every term of service you sign up for that they can change the terms of service, and they don't have to notify you. So you're essentially leaving, you know, billionaires to regulate the speech on these platforms at a moment's notice at their whim.
Well, you know, even if they do notify you, look at Alex Jones's case. I mean, when he was receiving those warnings, he's already built his whole media empire on top of YouTube. I mean, what would that warning have done then? I mean, his subscribers are all there. That's where Alex Jones might not be the best example for this, because this is my belief. It's too late to hurt Alex Jones in this way. So he loses couple thousand dollars he probably makes, probably maybe even tens of thousands of dollars he probably makes a month from YouTube, maybe even in the six figures he makes from YouTube. I don't know exactly how much he makes from YouTube.
Yeah, I don't know either.
It's probably a decent amount, but that's not where he makes most of his money. He's used YouTube to build his brand, to build his media empire, and he was smart for saying, why am I going to depend on Google ad revenue? I'm going to get this little side business going, my super male vitality. I'm going to get my man juice pills and my man juice pills doesn't make any sense. My man juice drinks and my Viagra-esque pills, my horny goat weed for conspiracy theorists.
Matt, I'm gonna have to interrupt you right now. It seems that you're making fun of super male vitality, which, as you'll know, is it's the best stuff. It's organic. It's okay. Never mind. I can't do this.
But that's where
I'll never be an InfoWars host.
That's where he makes all of his money. That's where he makes all his money. He's pulling in millions a year on basically becoming one of those weird alternative medicine people. And it's a good play for him, I'm sure. I mean, he also sells, I believe, like survivor packs for those survivalist kits or whatever. Another good play for him. And I mean, he got the audience from YouTube, from all these platforms, brought them to his world. They became consumed with InfoWars content. They became these Alex Jones-esque conspiracy theorists. Let me actually backtrack. Not Alex Jones-esque, because listen, Alex Jones actually, I think, is a very smart guy. He knows what he's doing when it comes to this whole charade.
It's all very calculated.
He's not one of these guys who is a. I don't believe that he is a true believer.
Speaking of this ban.
This
sounds a little conspiratorial. Alex, this ban.
Would you say he wanted this ban?
I think so, because he's been, you know, he's beating the war drum.
Yeah.
I mean, he's probably mad. He's still mad. But I, you know, like you said, it's too late to hurt Alex Jones. It's too late to stop him.
Yeah. I mean, I want to say he's not going to go anywhere. If people think this is the end of InfoWars and Alex Jones, big mistake. This isn't the equivalent of Milo Yiannopoulos getting booted off of Twitter and losing all of his money on failed media or startups or whatever. Alex Jones is a self-made man. His money, he's making money. He's set. Milo Yiannopoulos got booted off Twitter, which first of all takes him completely out of the media talk of the day. He wasn't set up like an Alex Jones. Milo's whole shtick was seeing what was going on in the daily news cycle and throwing his ridiculous opinion in on that. That's not Alex Jones' play at all. Alex Jones makes his own news. He doesn't need the current event cycle. Of course, something happens with Trump, he'll talk about it. But the dude is not dependent on going back and forth with the mainstream media on a regular basis like a Milo would be, and just being a shit poster. No. And on top of that, he's not dependent. Like I said, Milo needed that outside money from the Mercers or whoever was funding him. It was the Mercers at the time, I believe. Alex Jones is making the money. He's got people sending him money for products. He's set. I mean, there's probably no better business you can run online than a legit popular e-commerce business, because you got people who are getting a real product, so they're seeing something physical for their money, so they got no problem ordering more and more, and it becomes like a regular purchase for them. They're giving you money. They're seeing a physical item being delivered to their store, to their home, and it's like there's no better grift you can have.
Yeah, but you know, I do think banning InfoWars from these platforms does at least one important thing, which is, you know, if we rewind back to like the late 2000s when social media first started, you know, popping off, I think Alex Jones realized very early on like what kind of power these kind of websites would have and how he could use that to spread his broadcast and stuff. So InfoWars was one of the early adopters of like the tech revolution or whatever. And because of that, the InfoWars team became very skilled at using the platforms to bolster up the broadcast and get their information in front of people, you know, often which who are just scrolling through Facebook or something, and they come across some link with crazy headline, and all of a sudden they're reading InfoWars. And same with YouTube, they like InfoWars really figured out how that algorithm works and how to get people to click on stuff, that sort of thing. So, you know, what this ban does is it does remove, you know, one of the key components in the InfoWars war chest, as far as, you know, as they would say, like red pilling normies or whatever, which is that, you know, with these bans being pulled on some of the biggest platforms people go to for content like that, you know, general members of the public are less likely to have that interfere with a more traditional media diet.
Right. I mean, he definitely, I agree, he's definitely gonna be hurt by this. In so far, it's gonna be harder for him to, you know,
it'll be harder for him to grow.
Right, exactly. He's gonna have a harder time finding new people to jump into the grift. But again, he's been around for almost 20 years now. I mean, if you're in this, I guess the younger generations will have to find InfoWars some other way. I guess that's where he'll be hurt. But in terms of right now where he is, at least probably for the next, what, couple of years, anyone who would want to find InfoWars has found it. I mean,
yeah, I mean, the fact is he still has millions of people that he has convinced that InfoWars is like the only reputable name in news. So those people aren't going anywhere. If anything, they're probably going to watch more InfoWars for the next few weeks.
Right. Oh, for the next few weeks. I think he's going to make so much money now, actually, off of the smart grift now would be for him to do like a Patreon like subscription thing, where we lost our YouTube revenue. We now depend on users to send me money directly. I mean,
well, it's something else people don't know about Alex Jones is he has like a bootleg radio network too. Like InfoWars is actually broadcast.
Oh, yeah.
Physically over the air in Texas.
Yeah, I was driving upstate, not even that far upstate. I don't even remember where it was. But, you know, upstate comparatively to New York City, probably, what, a summer or two ago? And all of a sudden, we're switching through channels and fading in just as we hit the signal area for this particular station. I don't remember which station. Alex Jones fades in. And interestingly enough, it was probably still crazy, but he wasn't off, you know, he wasn't off doing his usual online shtick. I guess he realizes there's only you can only get to a certain level of crazy on terrestrial radio.
Yeah, because people would pull you. Like, if Rush Limbaugh started going off like Alex Jones did, he wouldn't have a show anymore. You know, if you're broadcasting on, like you said, terrestrial radio, there's like a set of regulations and standards that you have to meet. And part of that is like, you can't scream profanities or like have horrible, like defamatory content and stuff. And maybe that's like, maybe we need something like that. Maybe that's the answer. We need like an internet, you know, set of regulations that, you know, we collectively agree we're not going to do XYZ online. Because right now, you know, these rules being enforced by just whatever, you know, Jack Dorsey or whatever decides that he's going to like do when he wakes up that day. It's leading to this reality that's like incredibly inconsistent. And I don't know. The internet just feels like the Wild West.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the question I have is, you know, I don't think it'll ever happen because people, you know, are people going to realize that it doesn't have to be this way? Like Facebook, the question is always, what's Facebook going to do about this? What's YouTube going to do about that? What's Twitter going to bring down the ban on this, stop this account or stop this particular type of person? And yes, I partake in that too because it is something that is a reality right now.
Yeah, one of my favorite things to do is to tag the FBI Twitter account.
Oh.
I just because, like, you know, nobody's looking at that.
Right, yeah. But when are people ever going to realize, and it's a rhetorical question because the answer is no, that it doesn't have to be this way. Facebook and YouTube and Twitter and whoever else, Apple with iTunes and the App Store, you know, they don't have to be the arbiters of this stuff. We have emboldened them to be. Like, by using their platforms and by making that, and again, I couldn't live without it. It's the same thing as like people who are like, oh, rich celebrity, why do you think why are you a democratic socialist? Why don't you just give more money to the government? It doesn't work that way.
It's systemic.
Yes. Everybody would need to partake in this. Everyone would need to chip in and decide that this doesn't have to be this way or that this is how things are going to be now for it to work. So yes, until we can all get together and do this, I'm forced to use these platforms. Until it happens, folks, I need you to all follow me on Twitter, at Matt Binder. I need you to like me on Facebook. I need you to subscribe to this YouTube channel at doomed.tv. $5 a month, patreon.com/MattBinder. I mean, that's the reality right there. I have to...
And just to interrupt, I'm going to need you guys to all unfollow Matt Binder on Twitter. And follow me.
Oh, buddy, you could have easily just plugged your stuff. In fact, listen, I don't even remember if I had plugged your stuff. Jared Holt, at Jared L. Holt, right? On Twitter.
Yeah, that's right.
He works at Right Wing Watch. He's the host of, is it the Shitpost podcast or Shitpost?
It's just called Shitpost, and iTunes wouldn't let me write the word shit on the store.
Right.
It's exclamation.
Right. So it's S-H-I-T-P-O-S. What is it? There's an exclamation point somewhere there, right?
It's where the I is.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you can tell people... Excuse you, telling people to on my own. Last time you were on the show, because we have a similar style audiences, we did like a dual doomed / shitpost podcast episode. This is a doomed episode that you asked, and out of the kindness of my heart, I allowed you to, right before the show, I said, sure, you could post this on your feed as if it's a shitpost episode. Now, if you're gonna tell your own people on Shitpost, your own listeners to not follow me, I'm gonna have to.
It's all. I'm just giving you a hard time, man.
I'm gonna have to pull a YouTube and Facebook on you, and revoke your privileges.
First, they came for InfoWars. Jared said nothing.
Right.
Then Matt came for Jared.
Right. Yeah. That isn't that what Ted Cruz said today or something like that?
I don't know. There are a lot of people invoking that, like,
unbelievable.
That Nazi poem, which is totally, I think, way out of place when we're talking about Alex Jones.
Right. Right. Just unbelievable. Now, we could go on about Alex Jones and our tech overlords for forever, I think. We could probably talk about it so much more. And on this show, we definitely will. But you, Jared, were telling me right before this episode began that you're feeling a bit jet-lagged. And that's because you've just returned from Portland, where you were covering that Patriot Prayer Rally / Proud Boys March, right? That's what it was, a Patriot Prayer event with the Proud Boys?
Yeah, it's so Joey Gibson is running for Senate in Washington. He's not going to win. We'll just leave it at that. It would be an upset, like, on the scale of 2016 election night if he won. And he has, like, no money in his campaign, that sort of thing.
Well, don't say it would be like 2016 if he won, because we know what happened in 2016.
Yeah. Fair. But yeah, so, you know, in addition to being this, you know, ex real estate agent, he's also a very high profile member of the Proud Boys, which is like this weird cultish gang thing that Gavin McInnes runs, right? That the Southern Poverty Law Center has labeled a hate group. You know, and I'll go off on a little bit of a tangent there, just because, you know, a lot of people, especially in conservative media, make excuses for the Proud Boys. And I think that's primarily because what the Proud Boys do is they are, like, incredibly hateful. You know, oftentimes they've been involved in a lot of violent incidences, you know, between them and Antifa people. But they hide it under this layer of, like, irony or sort of, like, shitposty, like, internet garbage.
Right, because it's not irony, because I'm familiar with the old, you know, the old 4chan world before all this happened and they became legitimate. You know, the whole, you know, just saying racist and sexist shit just to get a rise out of people. There were no politics behind it. You know, that's really early 4chan, like, years and years ago. Now the people there are pretty legit when they're talking about what they're talking about, although they do it under the guise of we're just fucking around. But that's not true anymore.
Yeah, so the Proud Boys are like, yeah, you know, we're just a boys club. We're just having some brews, you know, getting a little rowdy. You know, maybe one of us, like, screamed the N-word, but, like, we're generally cool with them. And, like, you know, that's just sort of the vibe that, like, they send off and that, you know, a lot of media people, I think, have fallen for. And they don't realize, like, how many just, like, crazy, absolute, like, radical extremists have ties within that organization and sort of use, you know, join those organizations to try to use it as a gateway into, you know, this really far-fetched, like, white nationalism stuff. So all that being said, Joey Gibson organizes a rally in downtown Portland, and on the Facebook page, all the people start, you know, hyping up that it's going to be a big fight and that they're bringing weapons and that they just can't wait to, you know, defend their rights or whatever, by beating the shit out of counter-protesters. And, you know, naturally, that sends off a lot of alarm bells for those of us who follow stuff like this. So I got on a plane, and I went to Portland. And it seems like a lovely city. I really wish I could go back under better circumstances. And, yeah, I mean, it was a lot to take in. It took me a little while to process it, but I think the most important takeaway is it made really clear to me that rallies like Patriot Prayer, you know, just like Charlottesville was kind of last year, it's to some regular Joe Schmo walking down the street, if they come across this scene where there's like 1,000 people in ski masks screaming Nazi punks, fuck off. And they look across the street and they see like a crowd of people in prayer circles and like a grandma with like a straw. Like one person I met was like a grandma with like a straw hat and was holding a picture of Trump. I feel like, you know, to people in media that don't cover this all the time, it's very easy to see that scene and think that these anti-fascist protesters are just like absolutely insane people. But to someone who's, you know, been around the blocks a few times, when I attend this, and I start looking a little bit closer, I start picking out faces and seeing some like pins on people's shirts and stuff. And, you know, it had the air of just like a very plain Jane Trump rally, that sort of thing. But there were just massive chunks of like crazy extremists that had flown in, like some from Hawaii, others from Texas, just to go to this thing and hang out because they thought it was going to be like their chance to be in the big fight. And I think that's really telling. Like when we see these like crazy speeches or crazy rallies in Berkeley that are, you know, supposedly free speech rallies and stuff, like oftentimes what it ends up being is this convenient disguise for extremism and providing, especially young people in these like sort of liberal pockets, exposure to extremism. And I don't know, man. It's a
no. I mean,
it was a perfectly good Saturday, and I really wish these people would get a new hobby.
I mean, what you're saying is completely what's going on. I mean, there's no other reason to these events are not free speech events. These events are not, you know, rallies for some sort of policy. Like, you know, when the left, when progressives do some sort of march or rally, it's for something. It's fight for 15. It's for Medicare for all. It's to protest against the war. When these guys do it, it's not for anything. It's just to create tension, and they're specifically doing it in a city like Portland, like you said, you know, a progressive bastion type city. And it's to get a rise out of people, to create conflict, so they can live out their hero fantasies and also have something in the news cycle to peg themselves to. They'll be talking about this, what happened at this event, until the next one. And then that's just how the cycle continues. They don't have any sort of, there's no politics to the Proud Boys. There's no, I shouldn't say no politics. There's no policy to the Proud Boys. There's no policy for Patriot Prayer. These guys don't give a shit about anything.
Yeah, no, they're just concerned about ginning up hate, especially right. In like younger people who are, you know, attracted to the conflict that happens at these rallies. They say, oh, you like getting mad? You're mad? Well, here's something to get mad about: immigrants.
Right.
You know, and it's just that shit that like really gets me. I don't think, you know, oftentimes doing the work I do, every once in a while I'll bring up a group and I'll be like, hey, I know they seem fine, but you got to watch out for this. And people give me a hard time about being alarmist and everything, but like, I, you know, get it.
Listen,
nobody, like, this Proud Boys stuff is no joke.
Nobody gets that like me. I had Sam Cedar just last week going on Chris Hayes' show on MSNBC, telling Chris Hayes that he had a producer once who was telling him, we should really be covering this Gamergate thing. It seems like something that we should be covering early on. It's August and September 2014. No one else is talking about it. But Sam is just going, eh, I don't see how this is related to politics. And now Sam is on MSNBC telling Chris Hayes that this producer was telling him to cover this. And now these guys are in the White House. By the way, that producer is me, just in case anyone's wondering. So listen, I get sounding the alarm on something that doesn't seem like it's a big deal at the time and people thinking you're crazy, but knowing that you're deep into this world and you can tell when something is either A, gonna hit, something's gonna really take off, or then B, seeing the underside of something that may not on the outset seem like something very dangerous or too big of a deal. So don't worry, Jared, I'm with you on this. I get it.
Yeah, and I mean, what's another like bizarre aspect of this rally was watching police, you know, essentially like create space for these people and, you know, use force as far as I can tell, that was unprovoked, just to clear the streets so that these, you know, MAGA chuds can walk up and down and say they did it. They didn't have a permit to march in the streets, but, you know, the police were shooting flashbang grenades, one of which went off like a few feet in front of me and made me super dizzy.
Right. I want to bring that up because I've talked about these Patriot Prayer and these free speech bullshit, free speech events since they've been happening since Trump. And the thing about this one, and this happens at all of them, but it seemed like this one this past weekend was taken to the next level. And that's just the police and their seemingly affection. I don't know if that's the right word. Their defense of these protesters. Listen,
I guess like one side is saying, you know, Blue Lives Matter, and the other one says all cops are bastards. I guess.
I mean, but that's not how it's supposed to be.
It's not an excuse.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I was attending protests for a long time. I remember the 2004 Bush anti-war protests. I remember many, many days of Occupy in 2011, 2012, when there were no real counter-protesters. You know, it was the protesters versus the Bush administration. It was the protesters versus Wall Street and the bankers who caused the financial crisis. There was no other side out there to defend or to go against physically out there, and the police were our foils. They were our antagonists out there. So, you know, these guys hold a rally. You think the police would also be like, these guys don't have a permit. They're coming here with weapons. They're ready to be violent. You know, if they cause any trouble. We're going to also, like we treat all these other protesters, we're going to be the same to them. No.
Instead, what we saw was like the police overextend themselves to use force against anti-fascist protesters, which, as someone who was walking around the rally, there were fascists there. There were a lot of them there. And if those fascists weren't there, I'm sure if it was just a plain Jane, you know, MAGA hangout, I don't think you would have had, like, thousands of Antifa people show up.
Oh, we see the MAGA people show up randomly in, like, Times Square and in front of the White House all the time with their MAGA flags, and all what, eight of them max never really draw any sort of counter-protest because, yeah, in the big picture, they're harmless. They're just brainwashed by Trump, but they're not, you know, at least actively advocating for anything as they're out there. They're just basically saying, we love Trump.
Yeah, and yeah, it's, God, man, like, if you are an anti-fascist protester, like, there is more than enough reason to be out there. As somebody who, like, walked around on the other side and started, like, seeing faces and taking pictures so I could, like, cross-reference them later, there's plenty of reason to be out there. And you know, I guess like the big takeaway from Portland was that everyone feared that like this event was going to just turn into a bloodbath. I think the SPLC hyped it as like potentially the next Charlottesville. And it wasn't that. And that's because there were police everywhere enforcing, like, a strong separation between the sides. And then, you know, instead of these Patriot Prayer people having to find a way to get around and, like, you know, attack these people on the left, the cops did it for them. Right. And did flashbangs. They nearly killed a guy.
Yeah, I saw that flashbang hit this guy, and he's still in the hospital, I believe, right? There's like a huge, you know, circular, like cylinder-esque dent in it. If he wasn't wearing a helmet, this dude would probably be a good chance he'd be dead.
Yeah, it's not too hard to imagine.
And like, I can't remember the guy's name, the kid's name, but there was a young military veteran who something similar happened to him with the flashbangs back in Occupy. I can't remember who it was, but it really messed him. The health, what it did to his well-being is, I believe it's something that still affects him today. So this, whatever, you know, this person who got hit is gonna, it's incredibly lucky, but also a long road ahead, I'm sure. Jeez.
Yeah, and he's got a crystal clear lawsuit too.
Right. Oh, without a doubt.
So Portland Police Bureau, I'm sure, is they already launched an investigation because of like this photo going around of this, you know, canister lodged in this helmet. I'm guessing that investigation is being launched because they know they're about to get sued.
Right. Right. You know, I guess a good way to sort of leave this would be, you know, to combine both stories we talked about. Is that, you know, with the Proud Boys, and it's in prison, Paul of InfoWars says this a lot. These guys like to think that they're something alternative about them. They're the new punk rock, prison Paul loves to say.
Oh, God.
And it's so funny to me because these guys, listen, these guys whine about everything. And I said this before about prison Paul whining about getting Alex Jones getting banned. The punk bands I listened to would have wore those. The current ones and the ones that are no longer an active band who've been banned from venues, they wear that like a badge of honor. That's punk, man. You got banned from a venue. The next time you come to town, you got to play in some warehouse or some park illegally. You know, the cops could shut you down any minute. And you are proud of that. That's punk rock, man. These guys are whining because YouTube won't let them put their show on their platform anymore. I mean, and then with the Proud Boys, they really think there's something because they wear their what is it? They wear, is it Fred Perry they wear, or is it yeah? You know, the skinheads I knew back in the day, the non-racist skinheads, the sharp guys I knew back in the day when I was in high school. Those guys would have laughed at the Proud Boys. They would have looked at them and been like, these guys think they're tough or some shit. And, you know, I don't know if they're still called this, but the Chelsea girls probably would also think these guys were lame as hell. These guys think they're like, there's something cool about them. They think they're some sort of, you know, hardcore or punk aesthetic about them. To get initiated into their little fascist club, what is it? I believe you get circled by a bunch of them. Go ahead, you tell it.
Okay, so it's no less than three already initiated. And this isn't the initiation. So the initiation is that you declare yourself a Proud Boy and say you're not going to apologize for being a Western chauvinist or something. The second degree is that no less than three already second-degree Proud Boys circle you and then just start punching you until you name five breakfast cereals. And that kind of goes back to what I was saying about how, like, the Proud Boys are this, like, very weird blip of extremism. And, you know, they're hiding under, like, some of this shit is just, like, so funny and stupid that people don't take it seriously. And that's what makes me concerned about, like, the group and, like, the potential developments and, like, the future of where all this shit is headed.
Right. Right.
And to the punk rock thing.
Wait, but you didn't get to where I was trying to get to. I wanted to talk about the cereal thing.
Oh, the cereal thing. Oh, I'm sorry.
That's what I was talking about.
I'm sorry. Is the jet lag kicking in? It's about that time. Yeah, so you name five cereals, and when you finally get the five cereals in, they stop punching you, and you have become a second-degree Proud Boy.
Right. I mean, the smart thing would be to walk in. I mean, you know you're going to go through this process. You walk in with the five cereals already on the tip of your tongue. You've already repeated them before you show up. You know, Captain Crunch, Fruit Loops, Cocoa Krispies, Rice Krispies, Cheerios. Really easy, right? Just say those over and over and over again. And a little bit of a tip, my doomed tip for the Proud Boys. I mean, but, you know, it's just so stupid. But yeah, the punk rock thing is just their way of saying, you know, we were never the cool kids. We're not athletic enough to be the jocks. We wish we were the punks because we actually thought they were cool. But the punks didn't even accept us because we were just fucking lame, racist, sexist losers.
Yeah, and there's also, like, I just find it so hard to be punk rock when everything you're trying to advocate for is just authoritarianism.
Right.
Where, like, punk rock was like, fuck the man, fuck the system. And this is like, you want to know what's tough? I love the system.
Right.
I love the man.
Right.
I wish the man was my dad.
Oh, any sort of punk rocker who, you know, there's the conservative punk rockers like your Johnny Ramones and your whatever Misfits guy. I can't think of off the top of my head, whatever. Those guys aside, you know, in the punk scene, you have your like straight up anarchists who are leftists, even if they're against maybe, the sort of government intervention, you know, the whatever. They're certainly not on the right. They're far left anarchists. They're not your libertarians. And then, and this is the case for most punks I know, who even the ones who were anarchists growing up or whatever, they become socialists or communists or leftists, the radical left. I don't know any who were anarchists who became conservative. Those guys. Those conservative punk rockers were always conservative because there is no way that you are an anarchist and become a conservative. It's just not possible.
No way.
It just doesn't happen. It's just, you know, these guys, they don't get what they're talking about, but they're the new punk rock, in terms of, I guess, Johnny Ramone. Which means they're dead and buried because they're not going to be lasting. They're not going to be around for long. These guys are, I think these guys really in terms, you know, they'll be around. I should say, they'll be around for a while in terms of what they're doing. But this whole idea that they're cool in certain subcultures, little bit that's lasting, it's not going to be for long because their facade goes away every time. They whine and cry and stamp their feet about getting banned from a social network. I mean, give me a break.
Yeah, it's I don't know. Although I will say, if they're punk rock, what does that make us?
I don't know. Crusty kids? I don't know. Were the kids sitting in? Were the were those homeless punks that come to Union Square and Tompkins Square Park during the summer in New York, and then we head west during the winter? I don't know. we're leftover crack, and they're the Ramones, I guess. I don't know. I don't know where I'm going with this.
I don't know.
Jared Holt of Right Wing Watch and Shitpost, folks, you can follow him at Jared L. Holt on Twitter. What's the site for Shitpost?
It's we post the links to Patreon. It's patreon.com/shtpostpodcast. And we have Twitter and stuff, but honestly, like my Twitter profile is the best place to find all that shit.
There we go. I'll let that competitor Patreon plug slide. I'll let that All right, thanks, Jared. Get some rest. I know you're feeling the results of that. What is it? It's 6, 7, 8 hour flight. How long is that? I've never been to Portland.
It from DC. By the time I made my layover, I was probably going about 8 hours.
All right, get some rest, man. Take care. Thanks for doing this so last minute. But you know, we had some breaking Alex Jones news. Probably one of the biggest Alex Jones stories there ever will be.
Yeah, of course. Anytime.
Take care, man.
You too.
All right, folks. Let me hang up on Jared here. Peace. Bloop. I don't know if you guys hear that when Skype goes bloop. I still don't know what this, what Ecamm, this software I use, what you hear on the computer here. Oh, there we go. All right. Just a few minutes left here. I'll go through some of the comments. Listen, first of all, I want to say we have hit 104 reviews on iTunes. I am pumped, man. I hit my 100 goal for the iTunes review. Now what's next up? I guess 150? Let's aim for 150 now. Well, let's start even lower than that. Of that 104 iTunes reviews, 95 are 5-star reviews. Let's get 5 more 5-star reviews and make that 100 5-star reviews. Boom. There we go. That's the next goal for iTunes reviews. On Patreon, you can find this show, patreon.com/MattBinder. We're also growing there ever so slowly, literally month by month, growing member by member. But listen, I'll take it in any way, shape, and form. And I will be starting, I feel like I've been saying this for weeks now, but once we hit that halfway point for the goal, I'll give you guys your bonus content. I'll give you guys your members-only show. I'll come on here, no guests. We'll just shoot this shit. We will... I tried to stop a cough there. We will take calls. I will take calls. There's no we here. Oh, the we is us. You and me, all the listeners. I'll take calls, just the YouTube comments. We'll do a fun show, the daily, whatever's going on in the news that day, that week, whatever you want to do. We'll talk pro wrestling, being that I'm trying to cut down on the pro wrestling here because of the negative reviews I receive for talking about pro wrestling so much. Jeez. All right. Renee asks, can it be in Spanish? If you want to jump in and help me out, sure. Of course. I'm going to go back to some of the earlier comments because we had some good comments today early on. Jameson asked, what about Las Vegas trutherism? Yeah, that one's crazy. That one is crazy. I mean, they're all crazy, but that one specifically, it's like Laura Loomer and Jack Posobiec. You know I can't say that name. Jack Posobiec. Posobiec. Posobiec? Posobiec? Whatever. They were like legit like fucking with the investigation as it was an active investigation. Yeah, that's crazy. My dad says my new greeting to you, Matt, will be, so what's the funny thing about 9/11? Very funny, Pops. Jameson says now Jones gets to play the victim. Yes, that's a great point. I think I mentioned it earlier, but maybe not. Alex Jones is not going to be hurt by this. This is a boon to him. This is good for him. I'm not sure which one of those words is I meant to be using. He is going to be able to raise money from this. His listeners will eat this shit up. Theo, I said earlier, get ready to drop your favorite InfoWars moments in the comments for after the interview. And by that, I meant, you know, Alex Jones at his most insane, so we could all laugh and mock it. And Theo says, today, this is my favorite InfoWars moment. And I think that is fair play. I don't think I could beat that. Personally, I know it's one of the more well-known ones, but I will always love turning the freaking frogs gay. They're putting chemicals in the water that turned the freaking frogs gay. I'll always love that one. Misha says, hey. Hi, Misha. My dad agrees with me. Turning the friggin' frogs gay. Edward Norton points out that Alex Jones already has a subscription service. Yes, but not in the same way. Because now he's going to play it that, you know, you don't just subscribe and get bonus stuff. We can't live without you. Has he already played it that way? Maybe he has. But I know Sam, Sam also played Sam Cedar, the Majority Report. Again, his show is an actual service, if you ask me. I think he does good work that's worth the money. So it's not the same in terms of it being Alex Jones being having a grift. So I'm sorry, Sam, for the comparison, but Sam Cedar runs a show that's funded by members. If you are a member, you get bonus content. But without those members, the show could not exist. So, you know, when something happens to him, like, for example, late last year when Mike Cernovich had that smear campaign that bad faith smear campaign against him, which temporarily lost him his MSNBC contributor gig, Sam was able to use that momentum, that attack from the right, to grow his show by having a membership drive. And that's what I think Alex Jones is going to do. He's going to take a play out of the old Sam Cedar book. Jameson, my favorite was when he was interrupted by Paul Joseph Watson saying he had the documents that Las Vegas shooter was a hoax, and Paul Joseph Watson was kind of dumbfounded. Well, I feel like maybe we should do a whole show on PJW, Mr. Prison Paul. We talk about him a good amount on this show, but it's always as part of something else. But you just reminded me of one of my other favorite Alex Jones moments, and that's when he got super mad at Mike Cernovich. You know, you gotta be crazy for Alex Jones to be like, this guy is annoying me on my own show. You know, the video of that is great. Alex Jones visibly getting angry every time Mike Cernovich butts in, interrupting the host of InfoWars. How dare you interrupt the host of InfoWars? You talk when he opens the floor for you, Mr. Cernovich. Scott MacArthur, Trump sucking a ding-dong is better than World War III is a great little moment. Yeah, I vaguely remember that one. Edward Norton, social media shutting down only leads to more traffic to his main site and Prison Planet. Yeah, I agree to an extent. I do think new people won't be able to find him, but people who are currently in this world, new people later on will be able to find him, or will be harder, I should say, for them to find him. But in this moment right now, it definitely is a boost to Alex Jones. My dad, Cernovich failed audition with fist gesture. Yep. Louis asks, is the guest Canadian? I don't know if Jared's Canadian. I know he lives in D.C. Kahuna, seeing right wingers like Sticks and Hacks and Hammer. Yes, I know who you're talking about. Another guy I should do an episode on. I've mentioned him on the show before, too. Asking for government intervention. Yeah, it's pretty great to watch these guys. We don't need net neutrality. The government's going to control the internet. Private companies, ban them. We need the government to control the internet. Ah, it's pretty fun to say. Scott MacArthur, when I went to the Portland rally, mentions a hell of a pivot. Yeah, he was there. I knew he was there, but when I asked him to come on the show, the Alex Jones thing just broke today, and I was like, I want to talk about Alex Jones. And then he mentioned he was there, and I was like, oh, shit, that's right. I was watching, following along with your coverage over the weekend. So I was like, we got to talk about that, too. Renee, when I was talking about me being on top of these things before they hit the mainstream, ahead of the curve, Paul Revere Binder. That's right. The gamers are coming. The gamers are coming. That's what should have been my my call. If only people listened to my warnings. Heed my warning, folks. Renee mentions the skinheads, Johnny Ramone, Screwdriver, Gigi Allen when talking about right-wing punks. He calls them plowed boys, which is great. I like that, Renee. That's pretty funny. Also points out that British skinheads, Fred Perry, Ben Sherman, that's the gear. Yep. Yeah, Screwdriver had a weird, you know, they weren't always a racist skinhead band. They had an interesting transition. Maybe I should do an episode on Screwdriver, just, you know, a historical on that one, because easily still probably the most prominent of the racist skinhead white power bands. And they weren't, you know, they had a interesting history behind them. And of course, the guy who later joined the band and basically set them towards that path of becoming a white power band, having a pretty gruesome death. Uh, Renee enjoyed Alex Jones crying about Russiagate. Yes, that's another good one. Or his skit with the real Russian blonde female bots. Blah, blah, blah points out Sticks and Hammer also has a cute vegetable garden and he sometimes consumes military foodstuffs. Renee asked, did Alex Jones talk about the World Cup? I don't know about that. Renee, I'm a left-wing Fred Perrier, though. Yeah, that gear is not right-wing. I think it's poor. And I also just hate when people just say skinheads when they're talking about bald racists and bald white supremacists. I gotta say, at least maybe from my experience in New York, a large portion of the skinheads I knew in high school and college during my hardcore and punk band, when I was playing in a band regularly at local shows, really in the scene here, a good portion of the guys I were familiar with, at least, were not white. There's actually a good number of Latino skinheads in New York City. Even some black skinheads, complete with the boots and braces. Dogface Herman, Neckbeard Death Camp is a good band. Louis asks, do you think the solution is to have more platforms and less monopoly of things like YouTube and Facebook and things like antitrust? I think the best thing would be for how the internet used to be before the rise of like social media, in terms of this type of stuff specifically. And people who have their own political content, and, you know, websites people go to, hosted by, you know, the content creators paying for their own hosting. They are the arbiters of their own content. And people go to their specific websites. The problem is, it's not very easy. It's hard. And hosting costs a lot of money for this stuff. So, you know, on social media, you have a built-in audience. You just have to get their attention. And also, a lot of these sites like YouTube are hosting the content for free. So, yeah, it's hard, but that would be, you know, a way to mend those together would be the best of both worlds. Blah, 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 laughing about me saying that, yes, not all racists choose to be bald or white. Yes, that's true. Renee mentioning Jamaican skinheads, Rude Boys, Ska, Two Tone. Yeah, I mean, I should do episodes on this stuff for people who aren't in the know. It seems like a lot of my listeners are in the know here too. Yeah, definitely. I mean, I there's a story. I forgot the name of the band off the top of my head. I'm having a bit of a current band on Hellcat Records, Rancid's record label. Their singer, this girl, has been on InfoWars many years ago. And she's never come out and said she's changed or whatever. She's in this new band that's basically espousing sort of libertarian points of view while claiming to be playing two-tone, claiming to be like the Toasters or the Slackers. And I'm like, are you kidding me? I need to do something on that for sure. You just reminded me of that. Definitely. Blah, blah, blah. But who would distribute ads then? With your own website, right? I mean, first of all, I'm not getting any ads on here now. So, but anyway, yeah. I mean, there is certain ways. These platforms are helpful. There needs to be a way to combine it all, though. All right, folks, that is it for tonight. Renee, so you know kids got to pay Cassandra Binder. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, that is our last minute breaking news episode of Doomed. And maybe you should sell us Pac-Man shoelaces for our Doc Martens. Yeah. Yeah. Maybe I should start selling some punk rock gear. Yeah, maybe I should just start selling shoelaces and little and the 1-inch pins and patches. They should make some Doom with patches, right? Just like the InfoWar lead pill, says Renee. All right, folks. See you all next time on Doomed. And on the podcast, I'm going to throw that great song that Super Deluxe put together last year, I believe, where, you know, they basically used Alex Jones' clip to write I think it's Beach House. It was like a Beach House type song. It's fantastic. I'll throw it on the end of that, and I'll give the proper credit to... I'll do that right now. Let me give the proper credit to the guys. I throw it on here. Where was it? The Alex Jones Super Deluxe song. Oh, it's like Bon Iver. I can never say, you know, for someone who listens to, who knows all these, I can never, it's Bon Iver, right? Their I'm Angry indie folk song. All right, folks. See you all next time on Doomed.
The company store, the paradigm of absolute control. And that's why we're just out here doing simple things, pointing out that we're meant to be in nature and be natural. And this is where we find the source that God made to transcend the new world order. And that's why they want to try to keep us out of it.
I'm angry. I've had enough of these people. They're a bunch of Christian murderous scum. They're on giant death factories keeping babies alive. They're selling their body parts. What more do you need to know about these people? I go out and face these scum. They literally crawl out from under rocks. They have green looking skin. And they run around screaming, we love Satan, we wanna eat babies. I have them on video.
Hillary's in the creepy weird six stuff, man. She sleeps in the same room with that creepy weird woman whose mother wears a hood over her head.
What the hell?
That woman number one is ugly. Imagine how bad she smells, man. I'm told her and Obama just stink. Obama and Hillary both smell like sulfur.
Literal vampire pot belly goblins are hobbling round coming after us. My spirit gets close to that evil and I feel it go.
We're such self-centered crap. We don't even notice and it's self-rising up against us. Millions upon it.